Well, welcome everyone to the very first podcast of Inclusion Talks. We're talking about all abilities in sport, and it's become a very big part of the community, whether it be at elite level with Paralympics, and whether it just be, and when I say just, and I don't mean that in a very lighthearted way, it's a very important part of country Victoria, it's a very important part of all of Australia, it's a very important part of the suburbs. And with our Inclusion Talks podcast, by the way, my name is Dan Lonergan, for those that don't know me, reasonably well-known sports broadcaster at the ABC. I will be co-hosting this show with a lady who's done a lot for all ability sport, particularly in the Western District of Victoria, stretching from Colac all the way to the South Australian border. She is one of the great volunteers, and I would hope that one day, without putting any pressure on anyone and on her good self, that she will be rewarded for the amount of work she's put into the all-ability space when it comes to athletics. And her name, of course, is Cindy McDougall. Cindy, thanks so much for joining us. You'll be co-hosting this show with me, Inclusion Talks. Before we actually talk about your journey, and it's a fascinating journey, what is your aim with this particular podcast?
Oh, look, I think my aim has been the same from the day one when I started all this. I don't necessarily think it's just a podcast. I think it's a bit of an aim in my life, and that is that I'm a really firm believer in the fact that sport is a brilliant way of including people with a disability of all ages and giving them an opportunity to experience life at its fullest, because I think helping people become cohesive and interact and develop connections and, you know, all abilities is a perfect way of terming it, because the abilities that are gained from what sport can give people with a disability, when you see it from a person who maybe can't do anything to achieving even something incredibly minute, and you see the look of satisfaction and incredible just amazed. Is something that I think drives me, and I'd really love to see it where a day where, you know, disability in sport isn't necessarily something that we're fighting for, but something that is regarded as quite normal and expected, and you know, just what happens instead of what we're chasing.
Well, you got involved because of family members. We'll talk about that in just a second, but we need to give a shout out to our sponsor, Aussie Home Loans in Ferguson Street, Williamstown. Matt Wynn, Ben Frawley and the team, they specialise in all sorts of loans, in bridging loans, in car loans, commercial construction loans, consolidation and first home buyers, land purchases, along with property investment as well. And you can get in touch with Aussie Home Loans in Williamstown. Give them a call, 9397-0803. They mainly deal with the western suburbs in Newport, South Kingsville, Williamstown, and also Williamstown North. Now, your involvement has a lot to do with the fact that it's been a pretty challenging life. You have seven kids, six daughters and a son. Congratulations on having all these kids. But
child as well, which is great.
Correct. Exactly right. Yes, you do. So there's eight now. Five of them have or are on the spectrum of autism, aren't they? Now,
yeah, so some would say additional needs.
Some would say one on the spectrum is hard enough work, but to have five of seven, you would say that, gee, that is very unfortunate. Looking at you, there is a positive disposition about that, but tell me how that has affected you over the years, having five that are on, even though they're capable of doing things and they're very talented sports people, as we're about to find out. How tough has that been for you?
Oh, look, it's definitely something that's a challenge. I've long been a believer in looking at the positives, and sometimes that can be exceptionally hard. But look, it's, in all honesty, as horrible as this is going to sound, after the first child was diagnosed, that was something that I think for me was an incredible shock. And while I was aware that there were things going on that I couldn't really, I guess, as horrible as it sounds, put in a box and go, okay, this is what this is and this is why this is happening. We got the diagnosis, and, you know, my then ex-husband and I had a lot of stuff to work through and a lot of structures and things that, you know, and support networks and support services that needed to be put in place. And I think once then sort of 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the 7 in that initial cluster of mine were diagnosed, you just bounced almost, because you had, I guess, some of the learning, and they're definitely all different. There was a, you know, a person once said to me that when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, and that is incredibly true. You know, there is such a varying spectrum in all my children, not just in, you know, in their autism spectrum, but in their identities and in their beings, as is the case with everybody. So I think once it became a sort of second, third, fourth, fifth child, you tended to just naturally pull on those resources that you'd gained from the previous learning. And it was sort of only when things that had previously worked weren't, that then it would become, I guess, frustrating. You know, there was definitely times where I'd be sitting in the corner when all the kids had gone to bed, and I would literally be in the corner crying, because it was like, how can I make this better? How can I help them? How can this work? And look, that's still an issue even to this day. So I think a lot of it is trial and error. And I think everybody with children with additional needs would agree that, you know, sometimes things work really well for a long time and work well for one, and then they don't all the time. So I think it's just all about constantly learning. And again, like, as I said, keeping that positive mindset.
Does it help that they're a bit older now? You've got some who've left school. You've still got three at school, but most of them are teenagers now. Is it a bit easier, for want of a better expression?
I don't think that it's easier. I think that each age group has brought with it its own issues and its own sort of road bumps, I guess you'd call them, like road humps, that where you sort of come along and with age and with different situations, like with moving out of home or starting a career, or you know, just the things that I guess come with adulthood, can definitely bring about a difference that doesn't necessarily make it easier, just different. So I actually find the younger years easier, because you tend to get a lot more support from support services and a lot more support around helping their development and helping things like that. I find that a little bit easier. It's when they come into adulthood and there is that independence and there is that, I guess, move away from mum being able to help and mum being able to do a lot of the stuff, where I find the challenges actually increase.
Now, with your children, are they all high-functioning autism spectrum sufferers, again, for want of a better word, Cindy?
Yeah, look, they are. It depends on the circumstance and it depends on how they're coping. So to most people, they come across as what people term normal. But it is when things go astray or they're not coping or the structures that we've put in place aren't necessarily going to plan, where it can be really full on. I've been pretty blessed that they're all verbal. They're all fairly competent as such, depending on where they're at and how, I guess, dysregulated they are, that they can do a lot of things themselves. So in that sense, I've been incredibly blessed. And you would term them, I guess, high functioning in that sense. But with mine, a lot of the issues are social. So it's a lot around friendships and schooling and understanding. And, you know, when schoolwork gets hard, that's when we tend to see everything fall over at home, because the stresses on them in those hours at school, they come home and then this is their safe place and this is their quiet place. And that's when it tends to fall apart a little bit, I guess. And it's, you know, I don't claim to be the best mum and I definitely don't claim to know it all, but I guess as all you can do is read the room and pick your battles and do your best to try and work out what's happening and how to best help them and how to best guide them.
Have you been able to find out why, of your 7 children, 5 of them were born with autism or on the autism spectrum?
No, and I think that's been the hardest thing, is you do tend to look at family members and you do tend to look back through family histories and go, even back prior to autism being quite well known as it is now, and you go, well, you know, could that have possibly been one of the family members that had it? Or you question yourself a lot too, to be honest. There are, you know, there are situations and things that happen and you think, you know, maybe I am a little bit, you know, I think everybody is actually slightly on the spectrum. It's just to what degree. But yeah, it's not something I give a lot of time and thought to, because I don't believe that trying to work out why is actually conducive to helping them. I think it's more about just trying to work to their strengths.
Yeah, it's fair enough. It is pretty tough. Now, this is Inclusion Talks. This is our first podcast with Dan Lonigan and Cindy McDougall. We'll be co-hosting this show thanks to Aussie Home Loans in Williamstown. They also service North Williamstown, South Kingsville and Newport throughout the western suburbs of Melbourne. We'll be looking at all abilities in sport. And I thought Cindy, because of a very strong background in athletics and little athletics, particularly when it comes to all abilities in sport, would be the ideal first guest on this program. Now, Cindy, how did you get involved in the Little Athletics program, particularly the all abilities? I know my kids went to Kyneton for a couple of years. I don't remember. We're talking more than 10 years ago. There was an all abilities program. When you first started, was there an all abilities program at the Little Athletics centres in Southwest Victoria where you're based?
No, and that was the thing that I guess struck out at me as I began my journey. So I actually started because one of my neurotypical kids actually had a really big interest in athletics. So we took them along to the last night of competition one year just to see if it was something they'd like to, I guess, look into as they grew older and as the new seasons would start later in the year. And she really loved it. So it was actually our neurotypical child that started us on the journey. But in the first year that Caitlin was there, there really wasn't a lot of understanding around what we term multi-class or all abilities. And it was quite frustrating for me in that she struggled. So her first night at athletics, she actually ran down the 100-meter straight crying and absolutely hated it. And there was a girl at the end that touched her name tag and she punched them and we got pulled aside. And it was like, you know, this can't happen. And I had to explain to them that, you know, she had autism and, you know, she doesn't handle personal space encroaching very well. And this was a new environment. It was new situations, new smells, new people, new structures. And they were really good. They sort of said, look, well, we have to be a little bit more careful if you could stay with her just to ensure her safety and other people's safety. But, you know, please don't think that you're not welcome back. Please come back. And she actually didn't respond too well and didn't want to go back. So probably for about 8 of those 15 weeks, we were carrying her into the car and basically locking the door behind her and getting her there. But at the end of her first season, she actually won a medal. And this was up against all the able-bodied kids. And just set something off in her that you know, what is it, 14 years later, 15 years later, is still an incredibly strong motivator for her. So there wasn't any multi-class at all, and I wasn't really aware of it at the start. And I used to walk up to a great little ass man, Shane Bertrand, who now works for Little Athletics Australia, and he was fairly part of the furniture at Little Ass Victoria. And he'd see me coming and I'd walk up and I'd say, oh, here comes your worst nightmare again, Shane. How are we going with getting multi-class into Little Ass? Because school sports were actually quite proactive. Yes. And school sports had multi-class. So the girls had a pathway, Caitlin had a pathway. Caitlin is my intellectually disabled and ASD daughter, because ASD still is not greatly widespread in all abilities, athletics or sport. So she had an intellectual disability as well, and that was what gave her pathway in. So school sports were absolutely awesome and she made state championships, and I was pulled aside by Lisa Langley, who was an SSB multi-class coordinator at the time, great person and incredibly knowledgeable. And she said, have you thought about getting her involved in seniors and getting her involved in this on a better level? I really think she'd do well. So that pretty much started us on our path. And so every year I'd see Shane and I'd walk up to him and say, what's going on? Come on, you know, LANSW and LA Queensland are on it. and have it, why don't we? So it was quite a journey.
Did he get sick of you?
You could definitely see in his face he didn't like me coming up to him, that's for sure. I think quite a few times he turned around and walked the other way and tried to hide in the offices where I wasn't allowed to be. And I don't blame him because I was pretty persistent.
I know you pretty well. I know you pretty well, and you won't take no for an answer if you feel there's a good cause. I've known you for a long time on and off, as you know, and you've known me.
Yeah, it can be 25 years.
Correct. And if there's a good cause, and if it'll only be a good cause for you, Cindy, you will push until you achieve. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
And I think that was my big driver, was that I saw my daughter actually ended up, we had to fight really hard to get her into a special school. Yeah. And she went into a specialist school. And when I went into the specialist school, I was amazed at the actual abilities of a lot of the kids and started, you know, because I knew there were school sports pathways. I got into the school and said, look, these kids can actually do this. Can we get them involved? And, you know, it started off initially, it was just Caitlin and one of their great athletes, Drew Semmons, who I'm hoping to have on at one stage in the podcast. Ooh. He'd actually made it to international level already and had gone to their school. And he'd gone down the mainstream path. So now I knew that there were what we termed the multi-class path in school sports. We started getting teams together and it ended up at one stage, I think we had probably 12 kids from the school in a team going to regional swimming and then at least five or six of them going on to states. And, you know, these were kids that prior to that really didn't have exposure to much sports. Like part of their schooling was that they'd get taken to a local basketball court and throw a beanbag into a bucket or step over a rope. And I pushed pretty hard with a great man down here in the Southwest. Aiden, who was at the then Warrnambool Special Development School, and said these kids can do more, and he pushed really hard. And within a couple of years, they were doing their ass at a park called Browranda down here, which is a synthetic track. And you know, we had the kids in wheelchairs being pushed by their carers, and we had the kids throwing beanbags, but on a shot put ring, and those that could throw a shot put throwing a shot put. So you know, I think it's been a bit of a passion of mine. Once I knew that it was available and I could see that the kids were interested and wanted to do it, I did push and I did probably annoy a heck of a lot of people, but it's something that I believe makes such a difference in their lives. And even, you know, mainstream school, we got one of the children who is one of my daughter's best friends who was deaf, and she'd never had exposure to sport. And she'd said, they kept telling me that I couldn't do it. And got her involved in the multi-class pathway. And in year 12, she actually won a state medal in athletics, and she said, this is the first time I've ever actually felt like I was good at something. So they're the sort of stories that make you want to push.
Your daughter Caitlin, I mean, all your kids, and I've seen the CV, very, very successful, but Caitlin has become a star. Why do you think she's become a star, and could you see it even early days? And as you said earlier, there were times where she was so reluctant, wouldn't get in the car, but obviously you saw something in her, didn't you?
Yeah, look, my father was a big, I guess, push for the kids to do a lot of sport. He was quite an exceptional footballer, an exceptional judo player, and felt that it was important for kids to do sport. I'd actually been a national 10-pin bowler, and
yes,
and I wasn't as keen about the kids. It didn't really worry me if they'd done sport. So for me, it was very much directed by them. But definitely with Caitlin, once we opened up that school sports pathway and Lisa guided us towards AV, and which is Athletics Victoria for those that don't know of the pathways, we actually realised she was quite good at what she did. And with athletics in multi-class or all abilities, you can cross the line first, but it doesn't mean you actually medal. So, you know, she was winning a 100-meter race by 40 meters and still not winning, you know, and that in itself was a challenge and posed a bit of an issue at the start to try and get that understanding into her as to why.
Why wasn't she winning? Because it wasn't recognized. Is that right?
No. So with multi-class, I'm not sure if the listeners would be aware, some probably will be and some won't. With multi-class or disability sport, specifically athletics and swimming, because they're the two that I've been involved in, there is a what they call a baseline or a points scoring or a what used to be an MDS, which where children of all different disabilities, so you could have children with cerebral palsy, deafness, vision impairment, short stature, intellectual disability, there's quite a scope of categories. They will all go in the same race. So you might have a child that can do 100 metres in, like Caitlin at the time, 14 seconds, and then you might have a child with extreme cerebral palsy or you know, a severe disability that is doing that in nearly a minute. So there is a scoring system depending on what sport you're in, and they basically input that into a computer and they compare the time that the child's done with however the program works, depending on what program they're using, the figure that they have to spit out a percentage, and whoever gets the highest percentage is actually first place. So you can have a child that's come sevens and come first. You can have a child that's come first and they come last. And look, it's awesome because it gives everybody, and it's still got a lot of work in it and it doesn't work well all the time, but it definitely helps give it, I guess, a bit more of a level playing field and give kids an opportunity.
The fact that Caitlin was going well, did that inspire your other children to get involved? And we've seen them all do pretty well, win medals, make state representation. I mean, obviously, it's just be fantastic for you who goes every week. But we'll get to your story in a minute, because you don't only go every week, but you just about run every, and I can see you running every single centre you're involved in a very good way and running it properly. But did that inspire your other girls to get involved, and your son, of course, too?
Look, I don't think so. I think they sort of, as horrible as it sounds, they didn't really have a choice, because, as you said, they were at a track for Caitlin. You know, once Caitlin made the higher levels, we were at a training track three times a week, and they sort of didn't really have a choice. So I think Summer Lindley and Kenzie, which are my three youngest, they were at a track from when they were about 3 or 4 days old. So, you know, when Caitlin would run, they would run down the back of the straight with her, or you know, when she'd jump at the end of it, they'd try and have a jump and see if they could jump as far as her. So I think it was more natural progression. The older kids with Caitlin probably did it because I made them, if I'm being completely honest. It's we're here, so you're going to be doing something instead of sitting doing nothing. And thankfully they were engaged in that and actually did quite well in that. Georgia, my eldest daughter, she actually took it on board and went into an officiating capability. So she then took it, I guess, a next step further and went into the volunteer side of sport and does that exceptionally well, and still to this day is quite important to her, even though she's now a teacher. So the younger ones are drifting away from it now, and I don't know if that's because we're not, you know, at a training track and because we're not here, there and everywhere all the time. It's a little bit harder to keep them engaged now. But look, they definitely had their strengths. And I'd like to think that although I probably made them, that they were able to make their own choices and be guided by their strengths and enjoy it based on their strengths.
Now, we're not making it all about Caitlin on our Inclusion Talks podcast with you, Cindy, but she is going to the Oceania Championships. Is there a Paralympics in her, without putting too much pressure on her? She's still very young, of course, isn't she?
Yeah, look, she missed out on Paralympics, 3 or 4 years ago, by about 28 centimetres. So, you know, quite a distance, but not a distance in the same capacity. She is really trying hard for that. This year it's I would say fairly unlikely. Yeah. She's had some health issues. She has endometriosis, so that's impacted her journey. Mm. She's had some mental health issues, which she's, you know, quite open about, and that, you know, it's been a struggle for her. And she's had some, I guess, situations in her life which have made training and actually staying engaged in a sport quite hard. So she has drifted away from the sport at numerous times over the last 10 years, but her ultimate goal was always to make an Athletics Australia team. So she's made BURTIS, which is Australian teams, which used to be called INAS, which is an Australian team for people with an intellectual disability. So that's how she won her world championship at 14. But she, her end game has always been to make an Athletics Australia team. So it's 10 years this year, and she's just made her first Athletics Australia team.
So she's a long jumper and a sprinter, is that right?
Technically, yes. Started as a high jumper and actually won her world championship in high jump. Was a very good 200 Australian record holder still in the triple jump for her classification, and still got, I think she's still got about 6 or 7 Australian records sitting up there from numerous years. But yeah, because certain disabilities have certain pathways, her pathway events are shot put, 1500, 400, and long jump. So her, she's not a long distance runner. She doesn't enjoy it at all. She doesn't even enjoy middle distance. So her pretty much only path was long jump. So that has become her focus.
So obviously heptathlon's not an event, or even if it was an event, it wouldn't be something that would suit her because she has not the middle distance running. You couldn't encourage her to do that without putting any pressure on her?
Look, definitely heptathlon is available at the Virtus level. So again, that intellectual disability pathway, that 100% is a pathway. And we've talked about it in the past, but her passion is very much her jumps. So she loved hammer throw, but that wasn't an option for her. She did do it able-bodied for a little while. But yeah, jumps are very much her passion. So, you know, if Paralympics wasn't to eventuate, I think the Virtus pathway is something that she's very keen to continue on with, because it gives her that opportunity to do her triple jump and her high jump, which are still, you know, incredible loves of hers.
This is our Inclusion Talks podcast with Dan Lonigan. My first guest will be the co-host and eventually the number one host, Cindy McDougall. This is a real passion of hers, heavily involved in all ability sport, Paralympic sports. She's got daughters who are very, very and a son, very, very talented, all abilities, athletic stars over the years, particularly in the southwest of Victoria. And we thank, of course, our major sponsor, Aussie Home Loans, who are based in Williamstown. Matt Wind, Ben Frawley, and the team. You can get in touch with them. All sorts of loans available, any loan you like. 9397 0803. Now, Cindy, I suppose there is a phrase, you're either against them or you join them. So if you're going down and you're traveling like you did, and I used to get those long posts on Facebook, and sometimes I think, oh, Cindy, I'm worried about you. There were big days taking all those kids to Warrnambool from Terang, which is still 40, 45 minutes, beautiful part of the world, Warrnambool, but still a fair distance. And yet your attitude in the end ended up being, I'll join them, I'll get involved as a volunteer. Is it one of the greatest things you've done?
Yeah, look, I'd like to think so. There's still a hell of a lot to achieve, and there's a big journey still ahead. You know, when we were doing those 75,000 kilometres a year to get to sporting events and trainings and high performance groups and all those sorts of things, I must admit that I got pretty sick of us, and I'd get home and all I'd want to do is not think about us. But look, it's definitely something that I'd like to be able to leave some sort of legacy on. And, you know, it is those times where you take kids that have honestly never believed that they're capable, or you know, or just don't feel confident, and you see that confidence in their face, or, you know, you see them with that medal that they then sleep with and put under their pillow, and it means so much to them. That's what I want to achieve. I want to be able to know that, you know, these kids that may not be aware that there are pathways, that there are ways of doing this, that there are things that they can be involved in to give them, I don't like saying more meaning to their life, but definitely to help build them and their capacity to have a better life. You know, that's what I want to achieve.
You've been a Western Region rep. You've been involved in multi-class chief of events. You've been the Western Region vice president in 2018. You've been the Warrnambool Little Ass secretary for 4 years. You're currently secretary of Camperdown, a Little Ass, 2020 to 2024, the ACM delegate, Camperdown and Warrnambool, 2015 to 2023. I take it you never get sick of it, otherwise you wouldn't do it.
No, I don't. I'm actually, yeah, just finished up at Camperdown and was at Warrnambool for a couple of years, going back to Warrnambool next year. And I'm the
Are
current
you?
official of the year for Little Athletics Victoria. So that was probably my biggest and most amazing accolade. Of, you know, I would have much preferred my centre won the 5 awards that we were up for, but I managed to be the only one to take it out and took out the official of the year. And part of my speech after that was that, you know, you don't actually realize the difference you're making to a person's life. Like, volunteering is very hard going and it is a huge commitment of time. And it's funny though that it can actually make such a difference in our world as well. Like, people think that you're putting in the volunteer times and it's so hard. But for me, coming out of an abusive marriage a few years ago and getting to interact with people and getting to volunteer and getting to have that experience of being on committees and learning how structures work and getting that confidence back in myself and having that experience to, I guess, trust myself and my abilities again, it's quite an amazing feeling that, you know, while volunteering is really time consuming, it can really help build yourself as well. So, you know, from my point of view, volunteering, yeah, it is exhausting. It is absolutely exhausting. And, you know, there were weeks where I probably did, and to the detriment of my children, where I probably did 50, 60, 70 hours of unpaid stuff. But the benefit in that in me and the awareness, I guess, that I'm capable for a start, because having been in that marriage for a long time and having my confidence crushed, that was a huge thing, was gaining that confidence back and being able to help others. And, you know, you see people who you can read that are in similar situations or who are struggling. And sometimes being in that volunteering role can give you an innate in to be able to just give them a you know, hey, I hope you're okay. Do you need help? Can, you know, is there something I can do? Is, you know, hey, can you give me a hand here? And then you see them where they help and they see that they've made a difference. So yeah, it's quite a I guess an all round thing for me, in that there's a benefit to me, there's a benefit to the centres that I support, there's a benefit to the region, to Littles, to everyone. But it is that whole picture.
So when Shane saw you going up to him and saying, "We need all abilities sport in Little Athletics," was he the sort of person that was encouraging you to become a volunteer, or you thought it was good for you to be a volunteer to help you after the travails? And again, I'm really sad what you went through with your abusive marriage. Or was it a bit of both?
Yeah, look, it wasn't actually Shane Bertrand. It was a brilliant man from the Western Country region who's our current president and has been a president for a long time, Shane Bicknell. He probably was the biggest encouragement for me to get out there and put a lot of faith in me and put a lot of trust in me. And there was also a man from Little Athletics Victoria, Michael Massini, who worked for them for quite a while. I think he's at Life Saving Victoria now, but he was also incredibly proactive in giving me the confidence in my own abilities. So they both were probably the ones that said, you know, keep building, keep pushing, show us what can be done, you know, keep giving us that push that we need. And with Shane Bicknell, he actually, I suggested to him that I don't understand why we didn't have multi-class. And we'd had a directive from LA Vic at that time that they weren't looking at it that year. And we went ahead and did it anyway. And on my desk sitting in front of me right now, I'm looking, and I'm going to actually show the people watching the podcast, these kids here Shane Bicknell and I decided to run a multi-class event at our region. And we had kids come from as far as Melbourne. And we actually ran the first ever multi-class event for Little Athletics Victoria. And that was the day when I really knew that this was something that I wanted to keep going with and I wanted to build on, because the next year Little Athletics ran it without medals and I actually chiefed that event. So I got to walk the kids down the main straight to the cheers of the parents and got to, you know, to see their events. And then the following year they did it, and I got to present some of the first medals to the multi-class kids, which was the first time that actually been, I guess, put on an even footing with the able-bodied. So, you know, there's a lot of good and there's a lot of people that have made it happen. It didn't just come down to me. You know, I think Anthony McIntosh, currently the CEO at Little Athletics Victoria, is incredibly proactive and has been incredibly supportive of me and his team, to you know, for his team to listen to me and for his team to think outside the square and to build products and to build, something that's meaningful. So there's a lot of people that have been incredibly, coaching's the wrong word, but guiding me to be where I am now.
I see you as a hero. Do you see yourself as a hero, Cindy? I know that self-esteem is not something that is in your DNA, and it should be. It should be. Absolutely should be for what you've been through and what you've achieved over the years. I mean, the way that you've got this program up and going and, as I say, all abilities athletics is huge in the southwest of Victoria and getting bigger throughout all of Victoria through your good self. But you must think to yourself, if you don't see yourself as a hero, you must be proud of what you've done.
Oh, look, I think, and this is going to sound really horrible, I think hero is bandied around a hell of a lot nowadays. And I think the meaning of it is probably slipping. I don't see myself as a hero. What I see myself in, I guess, is a bit of a warrior in that I just want to see change. And I believe that unless you have people that are willing to step out and do things that they're uncomfortable with and to push buttons and push boundaries, that it doesn't happen. So, look, again, yeah, you're probably right. Self-esteem isn't a strong point when you spend 20 years, not looking up from the ground for fear of speaking to the wrong person or doing the wrong thing. It knocks your confidence and it does knock your self-esteem. And for a long time, even now, I still question a lot of my decisions. And there's actually a really great podcast around about imposter syndrome. And I listened to it and I went, I wonder if this is me, is this what I have? And I do tend to, downgrade what I do. And that's why the Little Athletics Award last year meant so much to me. And it was probably the first time I sat back and went, wow, I have actually achieved something. And I actually achieved Western Country Region Life membership last year, which, there's only probably 20 people or 30 people on that list in the history of Little Athletics Victoria. And those are the things for me that mean the most. They're where I can sit back and think, well, maybe I have made a difference. Maybe this, this thing that I'm doing and this person that I am isn't so bad, and that I'm, there's a fair bit of good there. So, yeah, I don't take praise well, and I don't believe that anything that I do is actually for me and that I should be praised for me. It's about what legacy you leave for those that come after.
What legacy would you like to leave, and what legacy do you think you're leaving?
My children probably feel that I don't spend a lot of time with them, and I probably haven't over the years, definitely in the last 8 years. But I'd like to leave a legacy for them and their children of knowing that you can do some really good things by just putting in a bit of outside effort, that you can sit in your little box and you can just do, what's expected of you and tick that little box. But it's when you step out of that and make a bit of a difference to the things that you're passionate about that is really what defines who you are. And I'd like that to be what my kids see. With regards to a legacy, I'd actually like to see a time where every school, every sporting organisation isn't afraid to have a child with a disability involved, because I think that comes down to a lot of it is the fear around, are we going to do this well? Can we do this well? Do we have enough? Are we enough? And I'd love to see that actually disappear. I'd love that to be my legacy where if a child with a disability wanted to do something, that adaptions could be made and that sports of all, not just athletics, I'm talking right across the board, that adaptions could be made to see them meaningfully involved.
This is Inclusion Talks, our brand new podcast on all abilities in sport with one of the great volunteers of All Abilities in Sport. She's a life member of Little Athletics, life member of many things to do with, all abilities in sport. And she won the Volunteer of the Year last year in this space. And we're talking of Cindy McDougall, who will be hosting this show going forward. And we'll talk about the guests that she plans to have on very shortly, thanks to our major sponsor, which is Aussie Home Loans, based in Williamstown, Ferguson Street, Williamstown. And you can get in touch with Matt Wind and also Ben Frawley and the crew, 9397-0803. Cindy, what makes a good volunteer?
Yeah, great question. Actually, I think the willingness to maybe be uncomfortable, the willingness to listen and listen well, because I think people can volunteer for all sorts of reasons, but I think it's when you actually look into what you're doing and the reasons behind it that give you the true drive of a person. So I think a good volunteer is someone that is really passionate about what they're volunteering with, that they go into it with an open heart and an open mind, that they are willing to step outside maybe what they expect and what they think can be the case. But most of all, I think it's just about being genuine and giving your time and your heart and your mind in a really genuine way and keeping it open.
When you're running events, and you've run a lot of events, you've been the boss, what do you think was your biggest strength in being able to run that event to ensure that it ran smoothly? And I've heard, and I've done a little bit of homework on this, just quietly, that the events when Cindy McDougall was in charge were run magnificently.
Look, I think it's being aware that while there are rules and regulations and they're there for a really good reason, that I think when you're running an event, having empathy and having a bit of heart, having a bit of understanding that maybe things, albeit the rules are there, that maybe looking at the people that are involved and looking at the reasons behind why they're involved is more important than anything. So for me, when I'm chiefing an event, specifically a multi-class event, but I do able-bodied as well. Multi-class events for me are about giving the child the best experience. So while they say you're not allowed to coach the child in an event, if I've got a multi-class child that's there doing their best, but they truly don't have a lot of idea about what they're doing, and you can see that there is something tangible that you can do to make the experience better for them, then that's something I'm always going to do, and I'm very unapologetic for that. You know, I think I'd like to think that I listen, and I'd like to think that when I'm running an event, I'm willing to take in from all points of view. So while I understand there is legal and there's rules, there's also parents who are scared and excited and worried about their child and how they're coping. There's also the child who could be overwhelmed or so excited that it's a lot for them, or afraid or even upset because something hasn't happened the way they've wanted it to. So for me, I think it's running an event or chiefing an event. It's great to have a great team. That helps a lot. But it's about who you are and how you actually look at how you're doing things and what you can do.
Are you a good delegator, or do you think at times, as I say, I know you pretty well, you're smiling at this, you try and do too much?
Yeah, I don't delegate. I'm shocking at that. It is a skill that I desperately need to learn.
Why am I not surprised by that, Cindy?
Look, it's probably, as you know, you've known me since I was 14 years old, and it was probably there when I was 14 or 15 as well.
Yes.
But, look, I think I am, again, as I've said, a very hard taskmaster on myself, and I think it's very hard for me to actually feel like things can be done to the standard that I'd like them to. So that is a very hard thing for me to let go of. But, yeah, look, I think my nature is that I would, and look, I'm lucky I've got an awesome partner now who is very similar to me in our life visions and the way we look at things, that, you know, if you can give well, and I think that's the big thing that sometimes I lose sight of, that if you can give and give well in a voluntary capacity, that helps build capacity, build strength, build support, build what you're wanting to build, then you should do that. But yeah, I am a little bit of a bugger. And that is why I've stepped away. You know, you've mentioned my roles. That is why I stepped away from my Camperdown role this year, because I wasn't able to give it what I felt it deserved. And the one thing with me is that I will give everything I've got until I feel like I'm not doing it well enough or that things are getting in the way. And that's when I go, okay, it's time to hand it over to someone else who's got that passion and got that vision and can give it what it deserves.
When your younger kids are a little bit older, they're still at school, what would you love to do? And I'll use the word Paralympic terms. If where in an ideal world an opportunity came about for you to be part of the Paralympic team? What would you love to do? Let's just say, Cindy, you've done so much. There's a job we'd love you to do, but we're going to let you choose it. What would you like to do?
Yeah, really good question. Oh, look, for me, my voice and my words and my writing has always been a passion, which is what connected us in the first place.
Correct.
All those years ago at 3CDS back many years ago. For me, it's about telling the stories. So my ultimate dream, if it was Paralympics or even if it's anyone, is to one day be able to tell the stories of the people who don't think their stories could be told. My ultimate goal in life, just in general, is to be a novelist. And I've started writing a book for one of my dear friends, Matt Rawlings, who's a para coach in New South Wales.
Yes.
And he's been fantastic on that front. But it's been probably 6 years that I've been plodding away at this and not really getting very far. And I keep telling him, no, I'm not going to do it anymore. And then, yes, I will. And then, no, I won't. But my ultimate goal is to tell the stories of the people behind the stories.
Well, I'm starting to write one on my life, and it's not a quick process, is it? I mean, you start and then you stop and then you start and then you stop, but it is therapeutic when you get yourself going. Now, in regard to this podcast, which is your idea, I'm just offering a little bit of assistance to you. What's your aim, Sydney? Cindy, what would you like to achieve from it?
Well, look, I think it's bringing awareness to the possibilities. When I started the idea for Inclusion Matters, Inclusion Talks, it was about giving a voice to people who are actually at the coalfront of it. So, you know, I've met so many amazing para athletes and with the most incredible backstories and the most incredible perseverance through hard times and the most incredible journeys, some to the greatest points of their careers, becoming Paralympic medalists, others that have just made state level and gone no further, but they're still para athletes. And I think that's a big thing, is the difference between Paralympics and para athletes. You can be a Paralympian, that is only someone who's competed at a Paralympics. A para athlete is an athlete with a disability. So I've met the whole gamut of those and have some great friends that are Paralympians, but I've got many, many, many more that are para athletes. And my idea for the podcast was getting the stories out there. So it might be, you know, a para athlete that's in their 20s that talks about their journey at school and how hard it was, or, you know, how little athletics transformed them, or how para sport transformed them, and, you know, whether they now have a career or whether it's now that they have friends and that was something they struggled with, and, you know, what they found benefited them and what could help the up and coming kids of tomorrow to be able to look at that as a possibility for a journey. So yeah, the podcasts for me were very much around giving a voice to people who may not have that voice.
I need to ask you about this. You may not have seen it. I heard about this. As you know, Ali Cole was on a reality TV show recently, one of Australia's most successful Paralympian swimmers. She's won a lot of gold medals. And she was frustrated that the able-bodied athletes, especially swimmers, which is probably the most high-profile sport, and they get these managers who take over and don't give you much of an opportunity to talk to them being members of the media. They have a media day here, and then a media day 6 weeks later, and they get good percentage out of whatever investments these swimmers pick up. But she said she's achieved nothing financially out of winning all those gold medals. When do you think, or do you think it'll ever change, that the Paralympians or para-athletes will be given the credence and credibility that they deserve like able-bodied athletes, considering what many of them have achieved, like Ali Cole, just to name one, over the years?
I think the journey is a long way ahead, to be honest, Dan. There is an incredible disparity between able-bodied and para funding. There is, and look, the government are working on that, and the organisations are working on that. I've got to give them credit. They are trying. But, you know, when you look at us going back 10 years, you know, 75,000 or 8 years, 75,000 kilometres a year, no funding whatsoever. When you look at the structures that really, even your top level athletes, they are still having to have full-time jobs to be able to pursue their dreams. And that's really hard when you need to be going to training camps and you need to be going overseas for competitions because you're not going to make that top level without doing and ticking those boxes. So I think there's a really long way to go. And I'm not surprised at all that Ellie Cole says that she's made nothing out of it. There are more poor athletes than there are footballers, that's for sure. And please Correct. Don't get me wrong, I'm a mad AFL fan, as you well know. And yes. It's something that I get very frustrated with, that you know, they put in, especially para athletes, because, you know, I don't like saying that they do more than able-bodied, because able-bodied would argue that, but it's definitely harder on their bodies and harder on their minds, and just the logistics around training and competitions and competing is so incredibly difficult, and there is an incredible cost involved with that. So, you know, I can't see, definitely not in the near future, there being a change to that. I think the fact that they're bringing it more into the mainstream and it's being shown on TV and it's being covered better with live streams and things like that is definitely helping. But, yeah, I still think there's a long way to go.
I know that your daughter, Caitlin, we wish her all the best at the Oceania titles, having to pay for it herself through a GoFundMe page. Tell us a little bit about that, and how frustrating is that for her and the other athletes that are going, that they've got to foot the bill for everything?
Yeah, look, and I think that's the hardest part. And look, I'm loathe to I guess be derogatory towards Athletics Australia, because they are an incredible organisation and they do offer some exceptional opportunities for athletes. But yeah, it is frustrating when you make a ratified Australian team and it's self-funded. And look, I've seen probably at least six of the athletes put up GoFundMes in the last few days. Three of those being para and three being able. So it's not just a para all abilities issue. It's definitely across the board. But yeah, this particular event has always been funded up until this year and isn't this year. And that's possibly because why? There are so many events.
Do we know why?
No. And look, I can only assume, and you know, assume is a terrible thing to do, but there is a lot of competitions this year. You've got World Juniors, you've got World Para Juniors, you've got Paralympics, you've got Olympics. There's Oceania, there is quite a few other events. So there is quite a condensed amount of competition this year, and that's the only thing I can assume is the reasoning behind it. When Caitlin competed in the regional Australian team for Oceania 2 years ago up in Mackay, that was also self-funded, but again, it wasn't an official Australian team. It was the regional Australian team. When she attended Arafura on an official Australian team, wasn't funded. So I think a lot of it just comes down to the amount of events and the amount of athletes that are going. And I guess, as horrible as it sounds, everything is still a business and it has to be structured for sustainability. So while it's incredibly frustrating for the athletes and the families, and, you know, you sort of do question if it's worth it for one event and $5,000 and, you know, all the nuts and bolts that come with it, there's such benefit in actually doing it. So, yeah, there's not an easy answer to that one.
Now, I know you love your footy. You live in the southwest of Victoria and you follow a team on the other side of Australia. I still don't quite understand this. But ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're talking. You think that Carlton and Collingwood supporters are passionate. I don't know whether there'd be too many more passionate supporters in Perth of this side than the West Coast Eagles in Sydney McDougall. Why the West Coast Eagles, Cindy? And they're not very well liked over here, as you know.
Yeah, I do know. So I do tend to keep it quiet at times. No, I don't. I'm loud and proud.
No, you do not.
To the extent it's tattooed on my body. So I know it is. I am extremely passionate. I had a friend who used to babysit for the Vineys when she was younger, and she brought an article in with Alan and Glenn when I was much younger, and fell in love with Glenn Jakovic, the teenage crush of wow, you know, this is look at this one. And so didn't think too much of it because my family were Collingwood and my cousins are the Cloaks, so had been brought up Collingwood or Richmond. And yeah, we had 16 Hawthorn supporters at my dad's in the 91 grand final, and I decided to be a bit of a bugger and thought, well, no, if everyone's going for Hawthorn, I'm going to go for West Coast, and said, I'm going for Jakovic, I'm going for West Coast. And we lost that grand final and have been a very passionate supporter and 13-year member, or 14-year member now, and 4-year or 3-year cheer squad member, and go to some places around the country. I'm yet to go to Perth, but go around the country and try and cheer as loud as I can for the boys. So, oh, look, it's been a journey, and you would remember my days back in Colac where I nearly got the sack for wearing West Coast when they played Geelong in the grand finals. But,
yes,
look, it's a passion for me, and I think it's been
nothing
something
wrong with
that it got me through some of my darker days. If
that.
I'm being completely honest, it was, being in a controlling relationship. There are things you just can't do, and the West Coast were the one thing, and he absolutely hated them, but they were the one thing that for me, I knew I could get to watch that game, maybe not every week, but most weeks, and it'd give me something to feel incredibly happy about. And I guess outside of my kids, which were my world, football gave me that little bit of a nice, happy getaway from my world of being so insular. So been very blessed in the last 3 years, as I said, to be involved in the cheer squad, which in itself has been great because, it gives you the opportunity to meet new people and do new things and push yourself out of your comfort zone. And, walking onto the MCG and Marvel and Suncorp Stadium, well, not Suncorp now, whichever one it is up in Brisbane, and a couple of weeks ago at People's First, it's an absolutely incredible feeling to get out there and be a part of something like that when, 9 short years ago you were living a world where you were too afraid to look up or go down the street. So, yeah, very passionate about my boys.
Should Harley be paid $2 million in a few years' time, or is it too much yet?
Look, I'm wary of putting a lot of pressure on athletes. I think that he's still incredibly young and he's settling into a brand new environment. And I must admit, I was really glad that the team let him go home to Melbourne last week for his mum's birthday. I think no matter what sport you're involved in and what level of ability, I think mental health around sport is important. And I think the pressures of a 19-year-old moving halfway across the country away from his support network, away from everything else, it's all about building that experience and making sure that experience is the best it could be. So if he wants to stay with us and that offer is on the table, I will gladly. I've yet to meet him. I've met all the other boys, but I've yet to meet Harley, hopefully this Sunday. But if the offer's on the table and he's still performing as well as he is and he wants to be there, which is the most important thing, I'd love to see it.
I can play. No doubt he can play. Inclusion Talks is our new podcast. Your host will be Cindy McDougall. I thought it would be ideal to have her as our special guest, our first special guest, thanks to Aussie Home Loans in Williamstown. And they service South Kingsville, Williamstown, Williamstown North and Newport in the inner western suburbs of Melbourne. One more before I let you go. You touched on it earlier. How much of a better person do you think you are after what you went through with your marriage, and what have you learned from that?
Oh, that's a hard one. There's been more learnings than I could even possibly go into. I think you learn that you are capable of so much more when you least expect that you are. I think that you have a better empathy and understanding. Just to go off track really quickly, you hear people say, why didn't you leave? And I heard that so many times over the years. And it's not until you're actually in that situation that it becomes so hard to actually do that. So for me, my learning was just being supportive of people and giving them an ear. And I've had probably 5 or 6 friends that have called out to me over the years and said, is this what I think it is? And should I leave? Am I safe to leave? And I say, well, look, I can't give you that advice, but you know what? If you're sensing something's wrong, then it's pretty likely something's wrong. And it centers around safety. Sometimes it's not safe to leave, and I have my own views on that one as well. With the current situation around violence with women and all genders, really. But I think you need to come to a point where you put yourself first. And I think my biggest learning out of my marriage was I thought staying and having two parents for my children was the most important thing for my children. I actually didn't realize the damage of being around that sort of environment long term, and they're still dealing with the after effects of that every single day. So my biggest learning was, sometimes you can think you're doing the right thing, but that's not always the case. Being away and being a single mum is hard, I'm grateful to have a really awesome partner now, but it was so much better than the environment that we were living in when we were living it.
How did you cope with the decision by the AFL to have a minute's silence for gender-based violence before each game on the weekend? Organised, ironically, and I reckon he's an outstanding selection. I loved him as a coach at Adelaide. I thought he was treated badly. Good player at West Coast. Good assistant coach at Sydney. I know Collingwood were keen on him. Don Pike, I think he's a very, very smart man. And he was the one that has brought this idea in. How did you feel about that? And do you think we're just touching the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah, look, I think it's a double-edged sword. Look, I'm so glad that they're bringing awareness to it. I do feel there's a little bit of tokenism to it. But as I said, bringing that awareness and getting it out there in the public eye and getting it in the media, I think is exceptionally important. And I, as you would have read my post a couple of weeks ago, I'm a war and peace novelist when it comes to my posts. You know, how many times do you have to ask for things to change? How many times do you have to say this isn't good enough? How many times does someone have to be murdered before something's done? So the AFL bringing that into the public eye and bringing it into the media and bringing it into awareness, for me, it's a start. It's awesome. It's great. And if it brings one person a chance to talk about it more, or it brings one media organisation the power, or someone the power to do something about it, then for me, that's great. That is awesome.
Now, I see kids just hanging around in the background, so I better let you go. I've taken up too much of your time. I see that you've got a bandage on your arm. You had a few injuries and your body's not in the best shape. That obviously doesn't stop you, though, does it? You are a determined individual.
Yeah, look, as I said at the start, I've always been that. But, look, there's definitely a lot going on there and working on that every single day. But look, I, again, it probably gives me a bit of a, you know, it may not be an actual lifelong disability, but it does give you a bit of an eye on the world, and you can see what, you know, how much harder it is to do certain things and how much harder it is to function in the world with that. So still don't believe it should stop you. So I think, as I've said to you before, I think there's a lot of benefit in doing things even when you think you can't.
Well, Cindy, it's been great having a chat. Cindy McDougall will be hosting Inclusion Talks, our brand new podcast. I will pop in from time to time if she'll have me, but generally I'll just be in the background with my partner, Joanne, who's got all the technical gear. So we thank Joanne Cochran for her involvement in this. It'll be going up on a number of different sites, including StreamZone, organised by a boss of mine in Glenn Carter at Gameface, and also on Spotify. And we thank our sponsor as well, Aussie Home Loans. They specialise in bridging loans, car loans, commercial and construction loans, debt consolidation, first home buyers, land purchase, along with property investment and loans for small business loans, and also vehicles and equipment. Get in touch with Matt Wind, and also Ben Frawley and their team. They're in Ferguson Street, Williamstown, and they service Williamstown, Williamstown North, Newport and South Kingsville in the western suburbs. Contact them on 939 70803. Cindy, you are a very special person. You are an ornament to all ability sport. It's been a great pleasure chatting to you. It's a great pleasure to have you as a friend, and we look forward to chatting more as we go along with Inclusion Talks. It's going to be a wonderful podcast, and there's so much to talk about, particularly with the Paralympics just around the corner. So we can't wait, and we look forward to having Aussie Home Loans on board. So thanks so much for joining us today as our first guest.
Thank you to them, and hopefully I can keep my large Great Dane quiet in the background, and my beautiful kids have just come home, so I'm going to go and spend some time with them. So thanks so much, Dan. Awesome.
Excellent. What's your Great Dane called?
That's Frosty. So I've got two dogs. I've got a Border Collie cross Kelpie Shadow and Great Dane cross Labrador Frosty. So, yeah, she's got a fair bark on her though. So the mute back there and the shush was very much directed at her.
Very good. Thanks so much for chatting, and I'll be in touch soon. Thanks, Cindy.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. Bye.
Bye, everybody. All the best. Bye.